This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by the Friends of the Magic Word. Those are the ones who, with their financial pledges and donations, help support this podcast to keep it going week after week. And we are now into our second week of 2021, and we are rapidly approaching episode number 600, and before long, we'll actually be completing 10 years of podcasting to magicians. And it's because of everyone who listens and supports us in coming back week after week that makes this keep going. But also, it's the financial pledges and support of donations that we receive from friends like Charles Arkin, who is our newest friend of the Magic Word. And because of their support, we're able to pay for our domain, our hardware, software, server, ongoing kinds of expenses that we have from time to time. So thank you guys very much for your support. And thank you, listeners. I certainly appreciate it. And welcome, Chuck, to the Friends of the Magic Word. Well, this week we are going to announce the winner, I should say winners, of the ebooks that Romani was giving away. We announced that contest a couple of weeks ago, and we've had a pretty good outpouring of people who had entered the contest. Again, this was open to anyone in the entire world where they can legally enter a contest, I guess. But it's for a free ebook for Spun Into Gold, which was her book that she had written some time ago and is available in an ebook format. And we will announce those winners at the back end of this podcast. Also, that if you haven't subscribed to the Pod Letter, I want to recommend that you do that. And also, that if you have not purchased your 2021 or 2021 Art of Magic calendar, please go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you will see a link where that you can order that through Amazon and help support us because of their affiliate program. It isn't taking anything out of your pocket. Mr. Bezos is the one who is supporting us in that affiliate program. So thank you guys very much for your support, and we appreciate that. I also want to tell you that this podcast is coming about as a result of a fortunate or unfortunate set of circumstances. Last year, as many of you know, that Walter Zaney Blaney had passed away, and he also left a couple of dogs, some Labradors, which his daughters were unable to take care of, and so thanks to Tim Drake up in Canada, that he said he would take them. And then he talked with Sean Bagunia, who is in Michigan, and he was going to leave. I was going to leave the dogs, or rather Walter wanted to leave the dogs. Let me restate that. The dogs were going to be left, I guess, with Sean, and then Tim was going to come down and pick up one of the dogs and then leave one with Sean. But due to the travel restrictions, Tim was unable to come down in a timely manner, and as a result, that both dogs are going to reside then with Sean. The long story short, which is kind of late for me to say that, it's already a long story. Let me just finish it by saying that I ended up driving the two dogs up to Michigan, where I had left those with Sean and then came back. It was about a 1,200-mile drive each way, and it was fantastic. In particular, I want to give a big thank you to Dr. James Grove. Thank you, Jim, very much for offering your lake house. That was a great accommodation that allowed me to stay both going up and coming back from Michigan. So it was a good halfway point from Houston to Michigan for me to stay, and it was delightful. And one of the interesting things was that along the way that I was posting pictures of the of my travels going up and back with the dogs on Facebook. And so he was one who saw my posts and said, hey, since you're coming by this way, do you need a place to stay? And it was great. What a community of wonderful magicians we have. And for him to be so kind to reach out and say, you're welcome to stay at my place as you come through Arkansas, or if you want to stay at this place in Southern Illinois, wherever it would be convenient for you. My goodness. Thank you, Jim. That was just tremendous. Jim Grove is a columnist for the Linking Ring Journal, which is the journal for the International Brotherhood Brotherhood of Magicians. And as a regular columnist, the name of his column is called Outs. And I contributed a while back, a year or so ago, and he's got a wonderful article that I wish you would read. It should be one that you would go to regularly when you pick up the magazine from your mailbox. And this month, I know he's going to be featuring David Kwong, and next month he's going to be having Lisa Mena, and then he's going to have Chris Capehart. And if you have some sort of a story that has to do with outs or where you have utilized an out in order to improve an outcome or to get out of something, maybe in a difficult situation, he would love to have that story so he could publish it in his regular column called Outs, again, on the Linking Ring magazine. You can contact Jim Grove through the Linking Ring magazine, and he could certainly use your help. So please reach out and share your story. I know the world would love to hear it. Anyhow, having said all that, once I got up to Michigan, had a chance to visit with Sean Begunia, stay at his home, and he was just, he and his wife were delightful, and I stayed there at their place and had an opportunity to chat with him. For those of you who may or may not necessarily know Sean, he is quite an ingenious inventor, I guess is the best way of saying it. Very bright fella with a lot of creative ideas. Admittedly, he says he's dyslexic. Perhaps that might have something to do with why he thinks differently, thinks backwards or something. Anyhow, he is one who has the Dancing Hank in the Bottle, also the sketch pad that comes to life. Several ideas. Very interesting guy, and I know that you're going to enjoy this very introspective and soul-searching and emotional ride of a roller coaster that we're going to take here today in this episode. So please welcome my very good friend now, Mr. Sean Begunia, here on The Magic World. Today I've got with me Mr. Sean Begunia, who is a creator, a performer, a historian, someone who has kind of been on the underground, someone who doesn't get out very much from the standpoint of really socializing a lot with magicians and hanging out, and for that matter, really doesn't do many interviews, if any at all. I think you were telling me earlier, is that right?
I think I've done one other.
Maybe one other. So yeah, I am honored to have you over here. And I am actually sitting in his home right now next to or near a model of Yoda, a full-scale model of Yoda. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I won that from Blockbuster when the Phantom Menace came out.
Back when Blockbuster, when people knew what that was.
Yes, right. Yes.
Exactly. I have driven up actually to drop off a couple of Walter Blaney's dogs. So I had taken the 1,200-mile journey one way from Houston up to Buchanan. Buchanan, is that where we are?
Yeah, Buchanan,
yeah, pretty good memory there after a couple of martinis to be here. So I tell you, after all this long drive, that the big payoff is for an opportunity for me to get a chance to chat with you. So this better be good.
I hope I don't bore you to death, buddy. I really am. I just wanted to say I'm just very grateful that you did what you did. You brought those dogs up here, and I'm very grateful for that. It's really awesome that you did that. You got a heart of gold to do that. Just get in the car and drive these dogs 1,000 miles away just because of your friend. And yeah. I'm glad that I was able to say yes. I'll take them both.
Well, right. I am thankful to you as Walter's family for you to be able to take these dogs, because this is something apparently that people who do have dogs will often just have them euthanized after someone dies. And so it's a horrible thing that their animals go shortly after they do. Yes. And for them to live on and have a great home here. And you got a great place for it, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. A dog sanctuary, as you said.
Yeah, it's dog sanctuary. And I just recently lost two dogs just 3 months ago. And and so then when I got the call from Timothy Drake, he's like, hey, can you take one of the dogs? I was like, yeah. He said, can you foster the other one until I can come and get it? He didn't want to say, will you take two dogs, Sean?
Yeah.
And I was like, what kind of dog is it? He said it was a Labrador. I was like, send me a picture.
Yeah.
So now I am, they found their forever home here in Begunia House.
This is great. I'm so thankful to you and your wife, Rebecca, for doing that. That is great. Well, I wanted to talk with you just about so many things, and over dinner and drinks earlier that we were talking about a few things we wanted to hold until now. And one has to do, of course, with your creation and when you were getting involved and you had won a contest, and you were talking about being at Abbott's get-together and having won a contest, and that you were told at the time that by others, like Lance Burton and others, of saying, this is what launched my career.
Yes.
And so you kind of will attest to that being the case, too.
Certainly. winning the senior stage competition in 2000. Winning the stage contest in 2000 totally changed my career. And it's because so many awesome magicians come to that convention.
That's right.
It's dwindled over the years, but it was really a great place to start your career and learn what you're doing right and possibly what you're doing wrong. And
you had people who would share
their
critiques with you?
Oh, yes. I had a really awesome opportunity. After I had won the competition, mm-hmm. they hire you the next year to perform.
Okay.
And it was the first time I was there where everyone could see me. And of course, it was very nerve-wracking, but I was just, I'm really proud of the first time I performed at Abbott's, not the second time, but the first time. I did really good. It was the first time that all these people that I had been coming to this convention for like 15, 20 years never actually seen me on stage. And when I did my hanky routine, I had no idea that I was going to be fooling magicians with that. It wasn't even a goal.
And as we're talking about this, just to let people know, the name Sean Begonia, that you are best known for the floating Hank and the Hank inside the bottle and that kind of a thing. So that Don Wayne and others have worked with Copperfield.
Yes.
We'll get into all that then too. But just so people kind of say, oh, yeah, that's the guy. Okay. And by the way, I'm mispronouncing your name. Tell me the correct way you had.
Everyone says Begonia,
like
Sean
flower.
Begonia, yeah. Like the flower. But in all reality, it's Begonia.
Okay.
But even my own family say Begonia. Okay. I'm not sure Begonia. What that's about.
Okay.
I just recently learned how to spell my name, so that's cool.
that's funny. So you were about 30 years old whenever that you'd won the contest. Then is that about right?
Or I want to say 29, 30. Mm-hmm. So I'm 49 now. It's 2000, somewhere around mm-hmm. in there.
Yeah.
But okay. I had signed up for 4 or 5 years in a row, and I just didn't show up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
You didn't feel you were ready, or what?
I wasn't ready.
Okay.
I knew I wasn't ready. And then finally, it was Don Wayne. It said, sometimes you just got to go up there and do it and just see what happens. And I finally took that advice in 2000. And
now, speaking of Don Wayne, that you had told me earlier also that you had only met him the one time at Magic Live, which was the first
Magic Live. The very first Magic Live when they said they were only going to do one.
Yeah, I remember that. Well, we were so successful. Financially. Let's do that.
Yeah,
let's do that again, said Stan. So as far as meeting Don, him giving that advice, you had never physically shaken hands. You were just talking to him?
Yeah. It went like this. I was how I first found out about Don Wayne, I was 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
My mom, we were very poor, and she had gotten me some tickets to see Copperfield. And I seen
in Las Vegas.
No, this was in South Bend,
Indiana. Oh, when he was touring
Moore
back
Civic
then.
Auditorium.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The show was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Just like his current show. It's really awesome.
Yeah.
So my mom had got me some tickets, and I got the brochure, and I opened it up, and I seen a picture of Don Wayne. It said, Illusion Manager, Designer, or something like that. And I remember thinking, wow, I wish I could work on Copperfield's show and invent magic tricks. How cool would that be? And so then Don Wayne, he had some very reasonably priced, awesome magic tricks, like his dancing hanky gimmick I bought when I was 16.
There was like a little pistol grip kind of a thing, wasn't it?
It was pistol grip, and it kind of like a window wiper action.
Right.
It had very limited moves, but it was a dancing hanky routine with full light and mm-hmm. no offstage assistance.
Yeah.
The moves were limited. And then somewhere along the line, do we talk about secrets here? I don't know how that works.
We can. Yeah, sure. Because the only people really who listen are magicians.
Okay. So one of the biggest things that happened was I put a magnet in the knot of the hanky.
Mm-hmm.
And the gimmick is metallic. So what this enabled me to do was to pull the hanky off, put it on my shoulder, and put my arms way down to show there's no gimmick or anything. And
right.
Come up and touch the magnet
uh-huh.
on there. And I remember when I first came up with it, I was like, oh, my God, I'm a genius or something, you know? Like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then I added some other things to it. And I just sent a videotape to Don Wayne. I found out what his address was. I sent him a videotape, and I sent it the next day. And I got a call from Don Wayne. I was like, oh, my God.
Wow.
Are you
wow.
kidding me?
And you were how old about then?
I was 25, 26.
Okay.
And the first thing he said, he said, "Hi, I got your videotape." And he said, "Is that my trick?" He said, "Well, yes, it is."
Yeah.
And then he asked me, I don't know. I didn't show how it was done in the thing. I just showed him it.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up showing I didn't show him how it was done or anything in the video. And then he was kind of talking with me. He was he didn't talk a lot about things. You know, he was very kind of.
Yes.
It's hard to get things out of him.
I've spoken to him a few times, and yeah, I know what you mean.
And he said that it is really good, and he said in his exact words, and I remember I was so excited, he's like, "I can't believe I didn't think of that." And I was like, He said, "He can't believe he didn't think of that." You know, I was like, I was really excited.
Yeah,
just because, you know, I just, yeah.
And so that acted really as a springboard to other ideas, thinking, well, if he liked that, then maybe I can add this or...
See, I would go to the libraries and I would look at the old magic books that would have the pictures because I was dyslexic and I didn't read very well.
Hmm.
So I'd read the pictures. And then when I did read the books.
You know, Banachek is dyslexic. We were talking about him earlier.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He also, So some brilliant minds are dyslexic.
Oh, and you know, while I'm here, I want to call out a teacher I had. Her name was Mrs. Youngs. She was my, they called it LD. Learning disability.
Okay.
It's like when you hear, let's say you're 6 years old, learning disability, what is that?
Yeah.
What, do I get a free parking spot? What's going on here? It was devastating. Mm-hmm. I immediately thought, well, I'm really stupid, then there's nothing I can do about that. And that's the best thing that ever happened to me, to think I was stupid. And
because you tried harder?
Yeah, I tried harder. And I was like, I knew, well, I'm stupid, so I really got to figure this out. I got to really figure out how to get these ideas that are in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And make them real, because so many people have an idea. Like, "Hey, Sean, I got this idea. You do this and that." And then I'm like, "Well, do you got a prototype?
Right.
Can you, well, how about you do this?" I'm like, "No, dude."
Yeah.
"Why don't you just get a piece of tape, some hot glue, and a pencil, and just see if that works?"
Right.
Many people don't want to do that.
Just like Walter did with his ladder levitation, we were talking earlier, that he started out with a little Barbie doll, basically, kind of a thing in a shoebox.
That little model of that... that suspension, which, by the way, I think is the greatest magic invention ever invented.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go to the next one would be Law Sanders' floating table. It's like it's in that realm when it comes to inventions of magic.
Yeah.
Very few inventions like the suspension, which the hoop is also a huge innovation.
Oh, yeah.
It's just all in one. It's like a miracle. Like it's almost like aliens said, "Hey, Walter, make this."
Yeah, we'll give you the knowledge or something. Yes. And so,
And then when I seen Law Sanders' table, when I seen it, like I've seen so much magic, I'll see a trick and I'll be like, "Oh, that's like a Blaney thing." You know, like I say Blaney thing in my mind as an inventor, as in, this is something that's going to last long beyond the inventor.
Right. Well, that's right. And the same thing like with your floating Hank in the bottle, the fact that and tell the story then also about how that Ab as a contest judge was fooled.
Okay, so it went like this. Like I said, I had signed up to be in the senior stage competition.
Yeah.
I did it because of Lance Burton said that, you know, it was one of his first things, and I was huge Lance Burton guy. I wanted to be, because I seen him on the Carson show when Carson gave him 13 minutes.
Yeah, right.
And it was like, oh. And then when he shortened his FISM act, I watched that so much, like the Three Candles and that kind of stuff. I finally performed. I was the last act. I seen two acts in my mind. I thought, well, they're probably going to get me. You know, they're pretty good. This one particular guy was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, maybe I'll get third place, you know. And so I did my hanky routine, and I was surprised by the reaction of the people backstage and then some people that knew me, you know, are walking around there. And they kind of like, "Well, what is that? What are you doing?" And one of the guys who I knew, I can't remember his name, he's like, "I was backstage and I did not see any of your assistants."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "I don't use any assistants." And I felt on my shoulder, a hand grab my shoulder really hard, like to the point where like I'm about to punch somebody. Like, what is going on here? And he grabs my shoulder, pulls it around, and Ab Dixon said, what the bleep did you just say? He didn't bleep it. He said, did you just say you did that dancing hanky routine without any offstage assistance at all? I said, yeah. He said, are you sure? I was like, no, really. And I said, do you want to see it? He's like, oh, please. And at the time, you know, I had to tell my, I have a really tragic, sad story about what happened when I actually won the convention. Actually, I'll go through it really quick. When I was going to be at the convention, I had a real job. You know, I put gas lines in mobile homes, and you know, I had to pay for my house. I'm married. I had a daughter. So the only way to go to a magic convention that starts on Wednesday and ends on a Saturday, you have to kill somebody off, like a funeral. You say, oh, well, my aunt died, or, you know, I know it sounds horrible. When magic is all you can think about and love, you gotta be there, but you still gotta have a job to pay your bills.
Right.
So I said that my grandma passed away, and I grew up. That got me a little. I said that my grandma passed away, and she wasn't sick or nothing like that. My grandma was like my mom. And so I got 3 days off to be there because you get 3 days off the funeral. I know it probably people are going to think I'm horrible for doing that. But well, anyway, I found out I won first place.
Wow.
I called my wife and to tell her, you know, because she's like had to listen to that song 1,000 times.
Rehearse, right?
Yeah. And then she had changed the message on the phone and said, hey, Sean, you're not going to believe this. Your grandma really died. I was like, what?
Wow.
Are you kidding me? So I just accomplished my biggest goal of my life. And the next thing I hear is basically my mom died. You know, it's like, whoa.
It's like she wanted you to. I mean, perhaps it was meant to be.
And you know what happened is then I got home. I'm devastated. This is the biggest death of my life. Sure. And my factory job calls me and said, hey, Sean, what time are you coming back to work? I said, well, I'm not ready yet. We only allow 3 days for a breathance. Yeah. And I said, I'll take as many bleeping days as I want. Matter of fact, I'm never working another real job again for the rest of my life. I'm done.
Wow.
I never went back to a regular job at that day because I felt horrible that I had to say that my grandma died just because I wanted to pursue magic.
Yeah.
And that be my career. And I was like, you know what? I don't care if I'm homeless and I can't eat and I got to live outside. As long as I can do magic, then that's what I'm going to do.
Wow.
That was a little deep.
it was. Well, that's pretty opening your soul there. So thank you. That, and so as a result of that, that is kind of like, well, if I'm going to live with the fact that I use that as an excuse and it really came to pass, then I'm going to have to pursue this. Do my very best to show her that I was making the right decision in using you as an excuse. And I'm sure that she's happy about that.
Yes.
Because you've been successful in creating a bunch of things. And I say a bunch of things beyond that. So you've continued then to other kinds of things that you've been working on. And
I do a lot of actual consulting that people don't understand. A lot of people think Sean Magone is just a dancing hanky guy. Some of the best inventions I've ever done was during consulting, where you got a secrecy agreement and you can never even talk about your best idea ever.
Right.
Most of those ideas I don't let go. But some magicians, they're willing to pay a ridiculous amount of money for something original that no one else gets to do. And I've been lucky. I've worked with David Blaine more than once, Chris Angel 3 or 4 times. Almost got to work with Copperfield. That's a good story we'll have to talk about.
You haven't. I was assuming that because Copperfield has done that. He's only done Don Wayne's dancing, Hank. He hasn't used yours then, huh?
No, he I think I can talk about this.
Well, since he's not using it.
My biggest goal as a kid was to invent a trick for Copperfield.
Because you told me that, you'd seen his show 40 times?
43 times.
43 times.
Yes,
okay.
Right before this pandemic thing happened, the last thing I seen was David Copperfield's show. And it was the fourth time I seen his current show in Vegas. I'm not sure if you've seen his current show. Have you seen it?
I have not. Last I saw, he was still working on his alien thing. I've not seen him since.
Okay.
I've not seen it with the ship and everything.
I try not to tell people about that because I didn't hear anything about it.
Okay.
And I've seen his show because anytime I go to Vegas, if his show is on, there's sometimes I'll go two times. I don't care how much it is. I just like watching David Copperfield. Yeah.
But you don't know him personally, so it's not
I've met him twice. Yeah. I got to spend about 5 or 6 hours with him in Michigan one time when they contacted me for the PTS system. Well, actually, they didn't know they were contacting me about the PTS system. They were working on something and...
What's a PTS?
Well, it's a programmable thread system.
Thread system, okay.
So it's a three-dimensional way to make something float and fly around without being able to see how it floats and fly around.
Fair enough.
The second person to ever see it was Copperfield. And my buddy Lee Asher, who's good friends with Chris Kenner, told him about me. And then Kenner calls me and he's like, hey, I'm going to call him for David. Well, I can't remember the whole call, but I do remember saying, I thought someone was messing with me. And I literally said,
"Yeah,
who the bleep is this?" Because I thought it was one of my friends. I was just like, I'm kind of a filthy mouth. Okay. So I'm like, who the? And then I hear it and it's David. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm an idiot. Like, first thing I was like, how do you even know who I am?
Yeah.
how do you know who I am? You know? And it kind of went like that. And I was talking to Kenner. And he said, hey, want to come down? And I was like, hey, if you guys tell me what you're working on or whatever. And they're very secret, so they don't talk about that kind of stuff. So I brought some things. And I had that PTS system. It was just a prototype. And I had just got it kind of working. And I was able to show it to David. And it was a really funny story. I'm not sure how long we should go into the story. But so I get into the Mendel Center in Michigan.
Okay.
And it's just like the Copperfield's crew had an accident in Kalamazoo or something where one of their illusion trucks had crashed and some of his stuff had gotten destroyed. And that's right when I met him. So
he was very,
he had a lot of other things on his mind. Yeah. And I'm walking in there and they have what's called Magic Lab where they do the creation, like Homer Leeway's in there and... Mm-hmm. So you go in there and David's on the phone and he sees me. He's like, I don't want him in here. And I turn around. I was like, Chris, I don't want to make him mad. He's like, whatever. He's like, he's just in a bad mood or whatever. He's like, just go ahead and set it up over here. So I had jet sets, Abbott's jet sets. Okay, sure. I had three of them.
That's what I use for my backgrounds or backdrops.
Well, I had hooked them up for just to hold the control system that I created, the motors or whatever. I set him up in a triangle, and I grabbed everything except scissors.
Okay.
And the magic I use is very strong. Okay. So you can't break it with your hands. So I go I do this little thing that I've done over years. I wrap it, and I kind of sneak up on it is what I call it.
Okay.
So you snap it really quick. Most of the time, it'll snap. I was a little bit nervous, so I was kind of sweating.
Cut through your hand.
I cut my hand, and I am bleeding like crazy. And Kenner's like, man, you're gonna have to go wash that up before David comes out here. I was like, all right. Yeah. So I go into the bathroom and there was something going on where like sewage was backing up or something. It was so bad in there, it was just hideous. So I washed my hand up. I was like, man, it stinks in there bad. And Kenner said, David just got done taking a dump. And then I just immediately said, oh my God, the smell of royalty. And I went, and then here is, I didn't know it, but David Copperfield was standing right there. And that's how I met David. That was like that was the second time I had seen
him. So I don't
David.
Know if I want to shake your hand right now, but I'll just kind of wave or bow to you, King Copperfield.
Well, then.
So did he see your setup?
Then? And Chris had already seen it. I could kind of tell. Chris is kind of hard to read when he thinks a lot, and I could kind of tell he kind of liked that. And I was like, well, maybe they like this. And then David sees it and he's like, Chris has pushed the button. I pushed the button and it's going and David just lights up and he's just looking around. And he's
Yeah.
And he's like going around me asking me questions. Who've seen this?
Yeah.
Is this yours? Just a lot of questions. I'm like, oh my God. It's like, I used to daydream as an 11-year-old kid. I'm going to invent a trick that David Copperfield does.
Yeah.
And I'm like in this situation and it seems like a dream. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. how is this even real? You know, how they know me and
yeah, seems surreal.
Yeah, the magic world is so small. I think it's pretty easy to, you know, kind of get known if you know if you did something different.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just completed the proofreading a book. I think it was the seventh novel by John Gaspard, which was called The Magic Square, and it's a very good book, which I recommend, by the way. And it is about Eli Marks, who is a magician, and there's usually a murder involved, and he gets involved in solving the crime, basically. And in this case, it takes place at a magic convention. And one of the things that he said in there is about as he was looking around, and there's David Williamson or Max Maven and different people, and he said, that's why that within magic, it seems like there are only two or maybe three degrees of separation. Of knowing people. I really hadn't thought about that. And that was an interesting comment because when you look at the music industry, for an example, I mean, how many people know, let's say, Lady Gaga or Drake or somebody? I mean, it's going to be several people. You know somebody who knows somebody who's in a band or knows somebody. It's kind of like a 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon kind of a thing.
Yes.
But within magic, it's much more flat. There are because of magic conventions where we do know each other and that people who are, quote, celebrity magicians tend to attend these or hobnob and kind of socialize, I guess, with other of us schlubs, you know, who are just, you know, there who are attending. And so you feel as if you're on a similar level because you both do magic.
Yes.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So anyhow, kind of got off on a tangent there, but I'm just saying that as far as like with that it's not unlikely that you would have had a brush with David Copperfield because of how few there are of us.
Very few people are inventing magic. And there are a lot of people. Actually, nowadays, you see 100 new tricks every month.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, mostly when I was card a kid, tricks
you
and
might
things,
get
too.
Four. I know. If I see one more card trick, seriously.
If
we stopped inventing card tricks right now, we could watch a new card trick every day until the universe ended. And we'd still have card tricks left.
Yeah.
Now, I love cards. I can, with a regular deck of cards, I can entertain an audience.
But what you're talking about as far as invention, you're talking about physical invention of something that is physically made.
Yes, handmade. And me and my wife, we manufacture everything ourselves. There's a few things that we do have manufactured elsewhere, but those are the things that I have the most trouble with.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be in complete control of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that because my magic tricks have been on the market for over 20 years, and I'm still selling those tricks to this day. A lot of people, like these companies, they'll get five or six people, and they get their pictures, and they're like, oh, look, we're a big, huge company. We got hundreds of this product. You know, I got a product from a company, a known company that's only been around like 3 or 4 years now.
Okay.
And we traded, and then I got two items from this company, and they came to me broken. Okay, first of all, I understand sometimes stuff happens, but you send me four items, two of them come broken. That is not what I do.
Right.
I want your trick to work 100 times without a problem. And if it doesn't work 100 times, then you tell me and I will fix it.
That's right.
I'm one of the few magic manufacturers, and of course, I like to make money, but what I do is I offer a lifetime warranty on anything you buy from me. I've had people send me a gimmick that's 20 years old and the battery thing's not working anymore. I'll just fix it and send it back because I appreciate them. So everything I sell and make, I give a lifetime warranty. Very few magic companies will do that.
I bought Los Anders floating table, and when I was rehearsing with this before I ever first performed it, it slipped and I grabbed it and my thumb went through the tabletop.
Yes.
And I contacted him. He said, send it back. And he repaired it free.
Yes.
Including shipping and everything.
Yes.
Amazing.
I spent some time. Actually, Luna, his ex-wife, had contacted me to work on an thing. And so I was there at the house, and then Law Center was still, his shop was there.
Yeah.
Here's Law Center. It's 98 degrees outside in the Vegas sun. Yeah. He's sitting in the sun sanding tables. That is what I do. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to make it myself or it's not right. And I know his dad makes some of the tables and stuff, but that's the kind of magic company that I want to be as well. You know,
send it that back. Kind of reputation.
Because you spend that money on that table. I remember I bought that table and I spent $1,500 on the first one.
That's right. Me too.
And I bought it sight unseen. Like I seen him do it. I never seen it in my life. I was so overwhelmed that I get it up in the room. I'm like, what? How am I going to tell my wife I just spent this much on this table, man? And as soon as she seen it once, she never said a word.
Funny story about that. I heard a story about a guy who had that table. And because we do share secrets here, he was saying that he was doing a home party one time and that some guy who had hired him, I think, set a drink or something on the table and the table fell over and it broke or whatever.
Yeah.
And the guy, the magician, just went off on the guy. And the guy picked it up and looked at it. He said, because he was saying, man, I spent $1,500. He picked it up. He said, it's just balsa wood, you know? And it's like, yeah, but you don't understand.
I had the very same thing happen. I ran into there's a theme, Halloween theme park really close to here. It's called Niles Haunted Scream Park.
Yeah.
They actually built a building for me and I would do the floating table. And I don't know what happened, but I kind of tripped over myself or stepped on a shoestring and I just went right into the wall with the table. Oh, but you know what? Because I love RC airplanes. A lot of the technique of building that, the same techniques are used in RC airplanes.
Yes.
And the same
for your gimmicks.
Yes. Yeah. No, I'm talking about the Law Center table.
Oh, Law Center, okay.
So you can use the same stuff to fix your plane.
Oh,
that
I see what you're saying. Yes.
With that, because a lot of those planes were made like that for lightweight and stuff.
Yes.
Hopefully Dirk doesn't get mad. I got a video of, there's a video that you should share. It's called For the Love of Hankies. I'm not sure if you've ever seen it, it's when I invented the extreme hanky, which I think might be the best thing I've ever done. And I did it because I was mad.
Explain that. Extreme hanky, as far as what.
Okay, so when I was a kid, and there's a picture up in the room with the, a shout out to Loopy Nelson, Nielsen. I never know how to spell
Nielsen.
Is it. Nielsen.
Lupe.
Okay. I love her.
Yeah.
Okay. I just heard
on so many different levels. Yeah.
I just heard about her diagnosis and you know, she just lost Norm and she's an absolute magic treasure.
She is.
Like an absolute treasure. I get chills when I think of her because I bought some of her wood stuff and she just a positive, wonderful human.
She is.
David Hines, I want to think his name was, has got a picture of this little girl who's holding the bottle that's corked with a dancing hank inside of it, moving around.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got this smile on her face. Matter of fact, it's my home screen.
On your phone?
Yeah, it is. It is my home screen on my, let me turn that back on. So every time look at that.
Oh, the look on her face is precious.
It is. It's the
lighting and everything. That's just wonderful.
Out of anything I've ever done in my life, when I see that picture,
that's what makes you do what you do.
I wanted to be that kid when I seen David Copperfield do the dancing hanky.
Yeah.
And actually, I seen Doug Hennings do it on the Muppet Show. So I had associated it as it was a magic Muppet, and I always wanted Blackstone or Copperfield.
Completely different method that Henning was using, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Totally, completely different. There's so many methods for the dancing hanky. There's actually a dancing hanky book. Have you ever seen it?
Did not. Who put that out?
His name is Mike Chen.
Okay.
And it's a dancing hanky book. I have it somewhere. I got like 20 of them. And this guy has compiled some of the best routines because there's been every great magician has done this trick at least once. You know, Keller, I got a poster of Keller. That's what I was going to say, the Loopy Nelson. I got the poster because they do the posters and you can tell them the exact size you want.
Yes.
And they will, and just great quality, you know, packed up beautifully and a nice thing. And it's really awesome. Well, when I was a kid, I wanted to be able to hold the bottle. I wanted the magician to come out with the bottle, the hanky dancing inside the bottle, because I didn't know how it worked. And what's really ironic is Not one time as a 13-year-old kid did I ever think in my mind how it actually worked. I never thought in my mind, string, okay? Yeah, I'll just say it, all right? I'll just say it. It never jumped to my mind because I was fortunate enough to be in the audience of David Copperfield's routine. Now, as a hanky connoisseur, like, if anyone has thought about the hanky more than me, then you should go get your head checked because you're crazy, all right?
I would think that John Calvert must have thought about that a lot.
Yes.
Because he used Casper.
Yes. I did a show with him once.
Did you? Okay.
I did. I got a really funny story about John Calvert slapping me upside the head at
what?
Tony Gerard, who another...
Yeah, I know Tony.
He is an extraordinary sleight of hand artist, yeah, and I've been very, very lucky to sit next to him for hours and hours and hours. Mm-hmm. He has a magic shop there.
And he's willing to share everything.
Oh,
he builds
yes.
a lot of stuff. I know some props for Hollywood as well.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of stuff, and his work on the Classic Force is better than anything ever produced. He talks about the psychology of this Classic Force, because that's one of my favorite methods, because it's the trick you have to do. You can't just practice
That's right.
You just got to do it and then be ready to miss.
That's right.
And then once after a while, you figure out how not to miss, you know?
Yeah. I got a tip on that from Tom Mullica years ago, and that was that, first of all, you try the Classic Force every time.
Yes.
If it misses, then you try it a second time.
Yes.
And so that way, then if you hit it, that the idea is then his idea was, okay, there are two ways of identifying the card that was selected. And the first one that you missed on, you turn it over and you just look at it and say, okay, that was a six of hearts. That's one way. Now, the other way is, and then, of course, that's the one that you had forced and you carry on with whatever. So you get a laugh out of the first one, you know.
I learned a lot about sleight of hand magic and the psychology of a spectator from that trick alone. Mm-hmm. Because you can, let's say they picked the wrong one. You mm-hmm. just say, don't look at it. And then you're ready for a top change just immediately. Mm-hmm. So they're like, okay, let me back up here. I'm going to grab your card, top change, boom.
Right.
Okay, you picked any card you wanted. You said it out loud, you know, because I usually say name the card.
Yes.
And then do it that way. And after doing it thousands of times, mm-hmm. there's an out for everything, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was it was actually Dick Stoner who was the first person to ever show me a Classic Force.
I want to talk a bit about Dick because you'd said you have some stories. You just he was influential in your career. Also.
Oh, I don't even know if I'd be a magician if his shop wasn't in South Bend, Indiana.
Okay. That was the first magic shop you walked into?
Oh, my God. I couldn't believe it. You know, it's funny. So I go into the first magic shop I ever been into. And Fantasio, Canes. Yeah. You remember, right, in the magic shops, they were in the little boxes.
Uh-huh.
And so I would see the boxes behind the counter and I said, so is this the cane, the big cane? And they were like, yes, it is. It is the cane. And but they were, you know, they were very, very harsh on secrets. No secrets. Once you do the secret, you either had to buy the trick or never come back.
There were other people working behind the counter. It wasn't just Dick, right?
No, it was very rarely was Dick there in South Bend because he was in Fort Wayne.
He was doing trade shows probably and stuff.
Oh, he was. He was on Nashville Now all the time. Yeah. And
that's where Walter Blaney was on, I think.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I would say Dick Stoner, without a doubt, him and Marshall Brodeen, I am the result of those two people.
Now, Marshall didn't have a shop. How'd you get involved with Marshall?
Oh, Hook's Drugstore, TV Magic Cards. Actually, it was the first thing ever, magic trick I ever bought was the black card box that Marshall. It was before China was making it because they put on the black card box, it's got that little secret panel or whatever, and it's the good one was shiny.
Okay.
When Marshall sold the company, the other company, they started doing cheap stuff and it just wasn't as good.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the black card box and I would show it to people and then I would sell it to them because, you know, I'm 11.
Okay.
And I wanted the TV magic cards. You know, he actually had a little mirror box that was a cardboard box with a cheesy little foamy bunny, you know? And I remember looking at that mirror box and seeing the principal of that box and literally sitting there for hours just looking at it, putting stuff in the box when it was open, when it wasn't open. I was just like,
yeah,
this is the coolest thing there ever was. It's like a little time thing, you know? And so then
and you saw him as Wizzo also.
Oh yes. Okay. So that's a story. That's a good story right there. So I lived in Mishawaka, Indiana. Actually, by the way, that's where Adam Driver, who played
Star Wars.
Yeah, Luke Skywalker. He went to high school there. He wasn't from there, but he went to high school there.
He didn't play Luke Skywalker. He played...
Darth
Vader.
He played Han Solo's son.
Han's son, that's right.
Yes. Yeah. We're both Star Wars nerds. I like that. So... WGN, like I said, I mentioned before, we were really, really poor. Like I was, this is how poor I was. In seventh grade, I had one pair of pants whole year. It was really, we were poor. Mm-hmm. And we lived in an apartment complex and my friends had cable. We didn't. And, but the apartment complex had a big, huge antenna that you could hook to.
Okay.
And you could sometimes get in WGN, which was the Bozo show. Well, our cable was broken.
Now, Mishawaka couldn't have been too far from Chicago.
No, it's about, I'd say 90 miles.
Okay. And so you needed to have an antenna. So a physical antenna could pick that up.
Yeah. So the apartment complex had wiring so you could hook up to their big one.
Oh, I see.
But ours did not work.
I understand.
Okay, and you don't just call and say, hey, the antenna's not working. So,
right, because you weren't paying for that service. Yeah.
Well, I'd went to my friend's house and I'd already liked magic and was loving magic and I watched the Bozo show and I seen Wizzo.
Yeah.
Which just happened. He was on Wednesday. And so I was like, oh my God. So
that
every
morning
I get up.
The morning show, right?
Yeah, the morning. Yeah. It was like before school. And I'd get up and it was, I'd get the bunny ear antenna out there and get the foil. It just wasn't quite, couldn't see. It was staticky. And so I came up with this idea. I was 11 years old and I had some wire from like the wire that you'd hook up to the UHF or
eight. Yeah, I remember those.
So I had those two wires. I took that wire.
Yeah.
I had a really long, for some reason, really long. And I took it outside and I lived in an apartment building that had like, it was pretty big. There's like maybe 10 apartments, townhouses or whatever.
Okay.
And it was all had gutters. So I'd taken one of the wires and I took it out of my window and I'm pounding with a butter knife. I don't even have any tools. I have a butter knife and a rock. And I'm trying to make something that a screw will go into, right?
Okay.
So I'm hitting it really, really hard. And then I hear, hey, what the hell are you doing? And here's the maintenance man. And here's this kid ripping up the gutter.
Yeah.
And he's like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I was going to hook up my TV. I was like, oh, boy, that'll never work. Yeah. Okay, I waited for him to go away. I had to know, is this going to work? I thought if I hook one or two of those wires to the aluminum gutters,
right,
my whole entire townhouse will now be an antenna and I can watch Wizzo.
Because the gutter was metal and that would be enough of a conductive thing to
antenna. First thing I did was I hooked both wires to it. That didn't work.
Okay.
I hooked one wire to it and hooked the other one to the TV and I got Wizzo. I couldn't believe it. It actually worked.
And you said that Wizzo was on like at 8:30 and you had to leave at 8:34 or something?
Okay. I got in a lot of trouble. My mom really got mad because, all right. So Wizzo's last trick on Wednesday was at 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
My bus got there at 8:36. It took me 5 minutes to go from my house to the bus station.
Yeah.
So he would do his last trick and then I would just run. I'd say 50% of the time I missed school on Wednesday. And it got to the point where my mom would be like, you just don't even go to school on Wednesdays anymore. And I literally, my school thing, it wasn't my thing.
Do you remember any of the things that Wizzo did specifically?
I do.
Okay.
I remember, I swear everything. He did metal photography, you know, the blank deck.
Yeah.
He did that. He did linking rings.
And of course, at that age, everything fooled you.
Yeah, everything. Yes. It was just so awesome. And his noonie, 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 noo, or whatever. No,
duty.
Duty, duty. I always say noonie, noonie. Matter of fact, a friend of mine from my town here in Buchanan, she watches, she was familiar with it.
Yeah.
And I said, noonie, noonie. She said, no, it's duty, duty, duty. I was like, no, it's not. And she's like, no, it's noonie, noonie. Yeah. She was right, by the way.
Well, when I was visiting him in his house and he was taking me through all of his collection of stuff, he had a toilet lid, and you open it up, and it had a picture of Wizzo. And when you open it up, he had a recording and said, "Duty, duty." He thought that was pretty funny too.
we were kind of talking about Dick Stoner.
Yes,
and I wanted to kind of finish up on that because, wow, what a treasure that guy is. There's a lot of people that feel the same way as I do. Here's the great thing about Dick Stoner. Yeah, his magic stuff was pretty expensive, you know, in his shop. Stuff mm-hmm. was expensive, but he carried a lot of good stuff, the books and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'd cut grass and I would do whatever I can to make money because there's no way I'm going to say, "Hey, mom, dad, you got to buy me some magic tricks." Mm-hmm. I'd actually got to ask, "What do you want for Christmas? Some magic tricks?" "No, what do you really want?" "Oh, I want socks, mom, please."
Yeah, right. Some clean underwear. Another pair of pants, maybe.
So I remember one time, I had cut several grass. I did a show, and I had $175. And
wow.
That was 1983, and I was a little kid, you know. Yeah. That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
So I walk in that place. I'm like, I'm going to own this place when I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, I walk in there, and I'm like, "I want that Take Apart Dove Vanish." Dick Stoner's like, "Do you have a dove?" "No." I'll use a sock or something, because yeah. I always, for some reason, the Take Apart Dove Vanish, it was called the Nightclub Take Vanish. A Cart Dove Vanish. Mm-hmm. I think it was Mac Magic or something.
Mac Magic, sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Didn't Mac Magic used to be in Ohio, or where were they? Not Michigan.
Was it Chicago?
I don't think Mac was out of Chicago. I visited, maybe you're right, I visited their shop way back when, and I thought it was in Ohio or Indiana or someplace in the Midwest. Yes. I've forgotten.
A lot of the magic shops carried their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I would walk in there with lots of cash. You know, I want every magic trick there is.
Sure.
I want the, and at the time, Mark Wilson's Course of Magic was ridiculously expensive. I don't remember if you remember when it came out, it was like almost $200.
No way. And I don't remember that, really.
It came with a kit. I want to say it was like $179. It had professional kit in the book and everything. I was like, whoa. Well, I'd come in there and I would tell him what I want, and he would tell me why I didn't need it. And he would say, "Why don't you just buy?"
That's a good magic dealer right there.
It is. It is. And I was like, "I want this, I want that." And she's like, "No, you don't need this. Where are you going to do this at?" You know? And so he would tell me, "Sean, buy a book. Buy Railroad to Card Magic."
Mm-hmm.
He says, "So for whatever, $25 that book was, you have 1,000 tricks, you know,
that's
or
right.
hundreds of tricks. You could learn that and do that instead of the bangle net thing, you know, the bangle net vanish or the."
Because you got 3 minutes right there as opposed to something you can do hours.
Yes. And it was the best advice ever, because even though I was dyslexic and I could barely read, if there was enough pictures, I could get through it. And a lot of times my dyslexic mind would take a trick, flip it around and do it backwards. And then other magicians were like, "Oh, I learned that trick, but I'm not doing it like that." It's like, "Oh, okay." Because I maybe in like Guy Hollingsworth, when he did that torn and restored card one piece at a time.
Right.
I watched that video so many times to try to decipher, just for myself, not to sell it or anything, just for to figure out what is going on with this one piece at a time. Because I think he was one of the first people to do it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had figured it out. And then when I bought his book, Drawing Room Deceptions. Oh my God, I love how the old English that's written. It's just such a wonderful, classic, awesome book.
That is, there are a lot of things that are worth going back and rereading in there.
Oh yes, that's definitely one of them.
It's one of those things I think that you almost need to savor and read a chapter or two and then come back and read the next couple of chapters rather than trying to blow right through it and say, "Well, I won't do that," or "I don't think I like that," or whatever, because I think you need to digest everything and keep it in the back of your mind, because there are a few things in there that I have since gone back to because I've seen someone else do it, and they said, "Well, it's in Drawing Room Deceptions." It's like, really? And I mean, two or three times this has happened, and within the past couple of years.
Yes.
That book like, is just
innovative. And it's just so, and I had kind of figured it out, you know, to the best that I could. And then when I would do it, I actually did it in restaurants and stuff. I tried to.
Did you work many restaurants? Speaking of which.
Oh, my God. I did restaurant table hopping magic for 17 years.
Did you? Now, not in Buchanan, not here.
Not Buchanan. I did that in South Bend, Mishawaka, Goshen.
Because there's bigger cities there.
Yes.
Did you ever work at the place in Carmel?
Illusions. No.
Okay.
I've been there a couple times. That was awesome. Yeah. I think that's where Kenner and Copperfield.
Luwag and all those.
Yes, and Luwag, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry. So you're working at restaurants then also. Was it like Max and Irma's or type of place? Or?
No, like TGI Fridays. Okay. I did a couple, like an Antonio's Pizza Place, which is a locally owned place mm-hmm. in Elkhart, Indiana. Lots of like Noble Roman's Pizza. That was my first one. I was 17. And
yeah.
then I worked there for 3 nights a week, you know, doing magic. And then, you know, I still needed money because I moved out of my house when I was 16. And I had my own apartment when I was 16 because I had no choice. It was yeah. either that or I don't know where I'm going, you know. Yeah. So I had to do that. So I had to work and I would do magic and it just wasn't enough money to pay the rent. And I was making for 3 hours when I first started, it was 3 hours, I got $50. And then within a year, I was getting $75 for 2 hours and I was averaging maybe $20-$30 in tips. But when you got...
How many nights a week?
3 nights a week.
Okay.
And when I got that third night, the money went down a little bit. They thought, well, we're giving you 3 nights.
Yeah, bulk rate.
It still wasn't enough. And then I made a big mistake, and I want magicians to hear this. I'm not even sure if table hopping's a thing anymore because it was back in the day, and now...
I did for 20 years myself.
Oh, I you know what? You become really good.
You do.
Really fast because yeah. you got a 5-minute act. Mm-hmm. If you don't have an ego and you think you're the greatest magician in the entire world, or why don't you listen to your audience and watch their audience? What do they think? You know, yeah. what do you think they think?
Yeah.
And then try to fix it the next table. Table hopping magic is the hard thing to do.
Yeah.
And you can get really good, really fast. If you take advantage of what's going on, you're doing an act every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And you can easily tweak things. Mm-hmm. And then by the time a year goes by, you have an experience that would take a stage performer several years to get. You can get that really quick.
Yeah.
Just from doing that. I learned a lot from table hopping. Mm-hmm. But the mistake I made was I decided to work at the place in the kitchen during the week. So there were several times when I'm performing and it's so busy and I'm a kind of worker that shows up. I work.
Right.
I don't mess around. I'm not doing anything other than, okay, I got to work until this time.
Yeah.
I'm done. So when you work for a place where you do magic, you lose your respect. Never do it. You can't do it. You know, even though you want to help sometimes, but no. You can't help.
Is that because that, let's say you're doing magic and they get really slammed and they say, hey, we need you in the kitchen?
Yeah, it's happened.
So they move you from performing to coming back into the...
But now I'm in the kitchen, you know, making way more money than anybody else. Yeah, it's not... I think a book that I got a lot from was a Jim... I want to say Page or Pace.
Yep, Pace.
A restaurant worker's handbook.
That's it.
Okay.
Kirk Charles had one also that was really good.
That the restaurant worker's handbook was really, I got a lot from that.
I've got to say, and I have actually said this several times in the past, there are a few really good books on restaurant magic. Those two I mentioned.
Yes.
The one with Jim Pace and Kirk Charles. Charles Green had some good lecture notes on that. There may have been one or two others, but the point is there's only so much you can say about restaurant magic. The rest of restaurant magic books really should just be dedicated to tricks you can do in a restaurant as opposed to how to get work, what to do, and how to work with wait staff and how to get tips, et cetera, et cetera. But that's already been rehashed. There's nothing new that has been said since Jim Pace's book, basically.
Yes,
so
yes.
That is pretty much the Bible, I think.
Oh, I totally agree. And I was very surprised at how well that book worked, you mm-hmm. know?
Like, and still does, I think.
How to get the gigs and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I just thought it's been so long since I totally thought I would do that for a really long time. Well, 17 years is a long time.
Yeah.
And at one point I had 5 restaurants. And then I got to the point where I could get the gigs easily. Mm-hmm. And then I would sell my gigs to other magicians. Mm-hmm. Actually, I sold my gig to my brother-in-law. My wife, I met my wife when I worked at Lee's Famous Recipe. She was a manager. And I made chicken. That's how I met her. And her brother, him and I worked in the kitchen. He was assistant manager. She was the manager. And we worked together. And I got him into magic. And he started doing magic as well. Hmm.
Does he still?
He does. Not as much because, you know, he's kind of doing a regular job.
Does he help you with some of your manufacturing?
You know, in probably the first 12 years or so, yes, he did. He did help manufacture a lot of things. Actually, his son works with me now. Like his son, his name is James. He works with me. You know, I was there the day he was born, and he's like the son I never had. When it comes to electronics and tech stuff, and the last few things that I've worked on, you know, he's been a big part of it. It's interesting to see that. You know, it's like he kind of followed my, you know, my things and like his technical stuff. You know, I'm not saying because of me he did that, but we're interested in a lot of stuff, and him and I could just sit there and talk about anything, and he could throw out an idea. And that's the good thing. If you can get into a group of people that know stuff and throw an idea out, and you don't have an ego, my idea is the best, blah, blah, blah. You don't get nothing done that way. Let's just do an idea. Okay, what is this idea? All right, well, let's test it. Let's get some glue. You know, let's see what's
that's
going
what
on
brain,
here.
That's what brain trusts are all about, and also just throwing out all kinds of ideas, and there are no bad ideas, and just kind of see where it goes, you know. So it sounds like, obviously, that you don't have an engineering background or anything, but as far as your creativity, do you find that it's something that you have seen that you think you can do better, or because of your dyslexia that you reverse engineer it, or is it something you wake up and think, hey, here's an idea?
You know, I feel like I'm an accidental creative person.
Accidental creative person. I like that.
I never thought I was creative. And then when these people, I've actually had some really big people like, oh my God, you're a freaking genius, dude. I'm like, if I was a genius, I'd cure cancer, not make magic tricks. All right. Maybe I'm clever, you know, or something like that. Yeah. But I've heard the word a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think the word genius is overused, you know, and
it's been diluted.
Einstein, Tesla was a genius. Matter of fact, Tesla, a real quick Tesla story about Buchanan. I'm a huge fan of Tesla. Well, if you ever heard the story where he fired up his Tesla coil and he actually stepped in the wrong spot, and he was getting 1,000,000 volts through him. And his assistant seen what was going on because he stepped in the wrong spot and turned it all off. Saved Tesla.
Matter of fact, he died.
Tesla actually said while he had the 1,000,000 volts going through him, he could see the future, the present, and the past at the same time. Look it up. He actually said that. Anyway, the guy that pulled the switch, when Tesla died, or when he stopped working with Tesla, he moved to Buchanan and retired. I just found that story out just recently. I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Because that's so cool. You know, like Buchanan, like, it's like, you see, it's really small. There's nothing here.
So you're saying that the term genius has been diluted and thrown around?
Oh, it has. So, yeah. It has. There's a couple things that I've done that even I've set back and I was like, whoa, what? How is it? How'd you even think of that, dude? You know, I've heard that a lot. And
like your favorite thing that you've invented would be what?
Well, there's two. Actually, I'm working on the third one right now, but the Ultimate Dancing Hanky, which was a Don Wayne invention that I added some things to, and that was the first real practical one-man, no assistance, hanky dancing in the bottle, jumping out of the bottle routine when it comes to magic. Now, John Calvert had the one assistant version.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a pretty cool, I've seen it a couple times. But the Ultimate Dancing Hanky and working with Don Wayne was really awesome. And it's something that I always like to bring up. It's stuff that normally people just don't tell people that they've done. I have one regret in magic,
and that is
how I dealt with Don Wayne. I invented the trick and I show it to him, and him and I, this is before the internet, and we would send videotapes back and forth to each other.
Okay.
He sent a videotape of how to construct it, and I would show him what I was doing, and then I would change a few things. He would change some stuff. And then as a kid who's just really tired of a factory job, I just want to be a magician. I want to figure out a way to make money. You know, magic isn't about money for me, but it's like, it's my life. And, you know, you got to pay your bills and stuff. So I had invested like $1,200 in this system, and it's been over a year. And every time I sent Don Wayne something back, he had a tweak for it.
Okay.
And he was going, he actually took it to FISM. He took 12, he had me make 12 gimmicks. He had showed me how to do it. Right. And then I sent him some, and he told me what I did wrong, sent him back. So I made him 12 gimmicks. It's going to be at FISM. And Don kept one of them. And he sent me back 11 gimmicks. And each one of them had three or four little tags on them telling me exactly what was wrong with it. And I thought, first of all, that's an interesting way to look at the magic. And he would talk about, well, the trick has got to work 100 times.
Sure.
Over and over and over again. I was like, I remember I spent all the money on this and it still wasn't done, you know? And I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And my wife's like, well, what's going on? What's going on? And then Paul Gross from Hocus Pocus called me and I said, you know what? I got something really awesome for you. And I released it before Don was ready. And I didn't even tell him. And it got on the back cover of Magic Magazine. The very first trick I ever come out, well, second trick I ever came out with, was on the back cover of the Magic Magazine. And I knew Don was going to be pissed. I knew he was going to be really mad because he didn't say it was okay. I took it upon myself to move forward against his wishes. And
without him actually giving the final stamp saying that this is 100%,
You know, a lot of people would just keep that to themselves, but you know, I'm ashamed of it. Me and Don talked several times after that. And he called me.
Was he upset?
He was.
Okay.
He was. He's like, so what's going on, John? I said, well, I released it and stuff. And I was like, he's like, I didn't think we were ready. And I said, look, I got it on the back cover. And Paul Gross sold a crap load of that trick, man. It, matter of fact, that magic trick was the very first magic demo that you could download.
Oh.
And I remember it took a half hour to download it in 56K. It was like crazy. So Don was he was definitely upset, but he said, okay, everything's fine. And we had worked out a financial agreement.
I was gonna say, so he had a part of this financially?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
He did have a part of it, and
because it had his name on it too.
Oh yes, it did. And I had redesigned it several times once I started 3D printing and stuff. And I was one of the very first magicians to ever use 3D printing. I bought one in 2007. In 2007, there were $17,000 and the software was $9,000. Mm-hmm. Now you can get a really awesome one for $400.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. Man. Well, anyway, with the Don thing, because of that, we never worked together again. And
so he was kind of cool.
Rightfully so. And he did get paid. He did make pretty good money off that trick. I did too.
But it was not 100% to his satisfaction.
No, it was not. Okay. And you when you're a kid, you know, sometimes you make stupid mistakes, you know, and I can't fix it. You know, I apologize. You know, I always gave him this money and actually I messed up my chances with the greatest magical inventor. Like he helped with the Statue of Liberty, the walk into the wall, some of the best magic I've ever seen live.
So you feel like there may have been some opportunities that you could have, may have lost by him not introducing you to some of those opportunities.
Certainly.
Okay.
Yeah. I actually talked to a couple of people that were in the room when Don finally seen that I had released it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said he was pretty upset.
Hmm.
Ah, sucks that happened. I can't fix it.
No, you can't. Life goes on.
Yeah.
You know, and that you continue. So you said you had two things that you are proud of. One was that. What was the other one?
Well, I would have to say maybe three, because the programmable threat system, the one that I showed Copperfield.
Yeah, okay.
You know, that got me to meet Copperfield, you know, so that's cool.
Sure.
But in 2013, you know, I was just kind of a rough point in my life. I had a bunch of losses and kind of losing myself a little bit, to be honest with you. And then I told myself, I'm never inventing another hanky thing again, because I didn't spend my whole life practicing magic to be the hanky guy. You know, like, you don't have any idea everything I could do, and I'm not with a hanky, okay? Yeah. So I just said, that's it. I'm never inventing a hanky thing ever again. I've had it. No more.
Yeah.
You know, it's taken me all over the world. I've met some of the greatest magicians in the world because of that trick. I was like, that's it. I'm never going to think about it again.
Yeah.
Some Jameson. And I was, I believe I was sitting with my friend Ron Jackson. I can't remember if he was here or not on that one. Him and I have done a lot of good stuff together. He's a creative genius.
Who is that?
Ron Jackson.
Oh, Ron Jackson. Okay.
Yeah. When I first met him, he was 100% deaf. But he could read lips so good that you had no idea he was deaf.
Wow.
You could, his voice had a little bit of a kind of a nasally. Yeah. You know, sometimes when you hear deaf people talk, you kind of get that. That's the only way you could tell. Well, anyway, I was angry, you know, and I needed money. I was like, I was going to lose my house. I'm going to have to do something. You know, either get a job or do something, dude, because, you know.
Yeah.
So I said that in my head. That's it. And I started thinking about other ideas, and it's as if a meteor flew. Like, I'm just sitting right here when it happened. It's as if a meteor flew right through there and just slapped me upside the head. And the entire idea, everything about it, it was almost like it came from the universe. People don't think this guy's weird. It's like,
with such clarity that you knew every detail.
And several of my best ideas came to me like that. It was every aspect of the idea, the mechanical aspect of it, the performance part of it, the practicality part of it, all came in just one, just like when I did the car through the window. I'm not sure if you've ever seen the remote control car through window.
I've seen a car through window, but not the remote control
one. Well, this one, the thing that I changed was the problem with car through window is the card is always on the other side of the window, and you got to go outside. So what I added was, you pull it back through. So
through the window.
Yes. So it shoots on the window. There's a video of it too, so you should post that.
So you can see it on the other side of the glass. Yeah,
it's totally on the other side of the glass.
But then you pull it through.
Yeah, a couple of, what I did is I squirt some Windex and I kind of wipe like this.
Yes.
Like wipes it away. So the gimmick put it on and took it off in the same action. And that idea came to me every aspect of it. I actually showed Copperfield the second gimmick of that one.
Yeah, and?
And he thought it was very clever. You know, and actually I thought of it because of his Orient Express special.
Oh, yeah.
Where he did the card on the outside of the window of the train.
Right.
So that inspired Windowmation. I was like, well, how could this actually be done? You know, I thought in my mind, is there a guy on this thing with a big stick or something? Yeah. You know, I actually got to talk to some people that was involved with that, and some of them talked when they shouldn't have. And they said some stuff, which, of course, I keep all. I respect anything Copperfield. I mean,
whenever that you showed that to him, did he say, this is something that I am interested in? And
I just showed it to him. I think he thought it was clever, and that was it.
Okay.
You know, not like, oh, this is the greatest thing. No, I just think he thought it was clever. I could definitely tell he was really paying attention to some of the stuff I had.
He was kind of putting that in the back of his mind, thinking, okay, well, I've already done a card through glass, and that doesn't really add as much to it to have to do that whole trick again, because people might remember that I did that in one of my shows. But he's probably thinking of you of saying, here's a clever guy, I got to keep my eye on him, and maybe he's got something else for me later down the road.
Oh, yeah, I think that's exactly what it was. Hmm. I was really surprised to see how involved he really is.
Oh, he is.
He's not just some rich guy sitting in a corner, hey, everybody do it. No, he's involved. He's like, he's got the secretary writing down everything we're talking about to make sure the story's right, and he gets the thing, and it's like, if people get off track, he gets us all back on track. And
I remember sitting backstage one time with Chris Angel, and immediately after his show, he had three people back there with clipboards, and that he was saying, okay, well, in this show, that this harness, you know, we just talk about different kinds of things.
Oh, yeah.
And they were writing all these things down. So for the next show, that they'd be tighter, that the light would be just right, or that they'd pick this up or whatever. But things were in his mind while they were still fresh. They came in immediately to jot down all of the ideas that he was downloading, which I understand what David does. Copperfield has things that he is a microphone that goes to the people backstage.
Yes.
So that he can mute one microphone to the public, and the rest of the people on his off stage can hear, hey, the next time this sword needs to be turned this way instead of the other way, so I can pick it up easier or whatever.
Yes. I actually noticed that a couple times. Mm-hmm. And a couple times because I've seen him 43 times. And yeah. That's not even an exaggeration. It might even be more. Okay. Like, a couple times I could tell that he was mad at his Allstate's audience. And he's actually called him out. You know, I was like, oh, apparently someone backstage can't see, you know, is during one of the tricks or something. Like, and yeah. I was surprised to see that. And, but I get it. Totally yeah. get it. You know, it's Copperfield, man. This has got to be the best you're going
to
do.
Well, listen, as we start to wrap up, and I appreciate the time that you've given us here.
Oh,
and
it's been fun.
Bearing your soul and talking about some things. It's gone very quickly. That name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and I always like to ask my guests of what it is that is their philosophy of life. So what is it that, not necessarily a word, but it could be a phrase, a sentence, something that's important to you?
I will say, I don't know. I guess when you say that, the first thing that just went in my mind without me thinking was, an idea is only as good as you are willing to pursue it.
Hmm.
And that is exactly what jumped in my head when you said that.
Did you just come up with that? Or
I just came up with that. It just jumped in my head because so many people have ideas, but very few people try to make their idea to even
reality.
A reality or even know if it works. It's just, there are so many damn good ideas out there that people didn't even try yet.
Well, like you were just saying at the very beginning about how, well, just take some tape and try to put this together.
Yes. Yeah. Or a booger.
Yeah.
A fuzz dot.
Yeah.
I didn't get to speak about the one really quick thing, which was the extreme hanky that jumped in my head. And if someone had told me 5 years ago that you will be able to take a dancing hanky, put it in the bottle, and then you can actually cork that bottle, mm-hmm. and you can hand that bottle to anybody in the audience, and they can't tell how it's done, I would have said, no friggin' way.
Mm-hmm.
And I invented that. I cannot believe it. And, you know, it just jumped in my head. I think magic is just my soul, and I am very grateful to the art of magic and all of the people that have supported me. And it's been almost 30 years now.
Wow.
And I get to make my living tricking people, you know, not tricking people,
but having fun,
you know, because magic is the closest thing you can get to on any art form that you can feel like a little kid just for a second. Mm-hmm. That as Paul Harris would say, the moment of astonishment.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a beautiful thing. It really is, you know, and it doesn't matter how smart you are. It doesn't matter if you're poor, if you're rich, you can enjoy magic and be a kid again. And what's wrong with that? You know, what else does that? Nothing does that.
Just like that picture you were showing me with that little girl with the just unabashed innocence and joy of mystery on her face.
I definitely want you to show people that.
I'm going to publish that. So, yeah, if you go to the blog, you'll see that photo.
There's been a couple times I was like, oh, my God. And I look at that video. I'm like, okay, this is why I'm doing this.
Well, Sean, thank you very much. This has been just pretty awesome. Thanks for your time.
It's been awesome, Scott.
Well, coming full circle, it was worth the drive up here
to come
to talk to you about this.
I am so glad. Hey, by the way, Reggie peed on my floor right when he got here.
Yeah, first thing the dog did when he came in. It's like,
he's
it was
all
so
right,
excited
man. They're
going to
be great.
So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Sean Begonia. Right?
Yes, you got that right. Begonia.
Okay.
I actually liked his Begonia.
Begonia.
Sounds better.
There we go. This is Scotty out.
I'm a little bit too emotional. I
thank you so very much, Sean, for those words that you had shared with us and your emotions, your thoughts and creativity and the time. That was wonderful. Wonderful. I hope the rest of you listeners enjoyed this a little bit longer than usual episode. It certainly had a lot to try to pack in here in just this short time that we have together. But thanks for hanging in there and for listening. And also that, as we had talked about during the podcast, there are a couple of things that we said we're going to be putting on the blog. And so I suggest that you go to themagicwordpodcast.com. And there you can see actually a video that he was referring to for Love of the Hanky. That is a pretty good video to show that, as well as the picture picture of the little girl holding the bottle with the just a priceless expression that's on her face. It's just pretty darn amazing. And other links that you can find there as well. And so please go to the website and check that out, where you can also there subscribe to our weekly pod letter as well. Well, we mentioned at the beginning of this that we have randomly drawn the names of those who have won the contest for the e-books Spun into Gold by Romani. And the winners' names are Tom Cerny, Jeroen Weiss, and Richard Killian. Congratulations, guys. And your ebook should be arriving in your inbox shortly. I appreciate everyone who had entered the contest, and not everybody can be a winner. But if you are interested to get a copy of this, again, you can purchase that through Amazon.com. If you'll just go to, again, themagicwordpodcast.com, there are several links there that will link it to the purchasing a copy of the book. And when you do that, not only does Romani get helped mainly, but because of Amazon's affiliate program, that the Magic Word gets a little bit of that love back then as well. So thank you guys again very much for listening this week. I'm going to wrap this up here then now, because we've got an exciting episode that's going to be coming up next week, and we describe that in our weekly pod letter if you're a subscriber. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember, an idea is only as good as you're willing to pursue it. This is Scotty out.